Chapter 11, Military Life. During room inspections, we were given a couple hours the prior evening to prepare for the morning. I had a notice attached to my wardrobe describing the specific steps that had to be taken. It described the angle of bed folding and the technique to arrange my shirts and the measurements. There was even precise instruction on how to fold my socks. I could not believe that my first real battle involved rolling my socks in the balls. I did not understand how it could possibly help me to be a better soldier. It was not the adventure I was promised, and I dreaded the mundane ordeal. I remember waking up at dawn to the sound of voices and a small light in the hallway. I looked out my window and it was still pitch black. I had no dream. I heard my platoon members quietly gathering in the dark, so I stood up, yawned, and put on my athletic clothing for the morning. I wore a standard issue plain gray shirt and shorts, and uncomfortably heavy running shoes. I hid down the endless spiraling 14 flights of stairs and emerged outside in the pitch black twilight, breathing heavily. There stood my sergeant. He was out of uniform and looked like a different man. He positioned me to the side to form a line until everyone emerged from the stairway. Satisfied, he started to run, and we followed behind. Surprisingly, he spoke to me as I ran near him, telling me to conserve energy because it was important to finish strong. Our platoon ran around the base, a dark line of gray uniforms with people of all shapes and sizes. I kept my pace at the front thanks to all the running with Cliff. Behind me, the slow, unprepared runners looked like they were dying, and I wondered how anyone could join the military without any preparation. Was that like my school mentality? Getting through without studying? Alas, there was nothing I could do. I saw no sense in lagging back behind with them. Soon they were going to suffer from shin splints. I wondered how many were going to get thrown out when the testing came. After our short 20-minute jog, our platoon formed yet another line. The sergeant counted out a roll call before allowing us up to the showers. The sergeant was not happy because here in the army our weakest link defined the entire platoon, and since we had such slow runners it reflected upon all of us. When he drilled extra strength training as punishment, us good runners had to do it too. Personally, it made no sense. Why not be defined by the strongest? Either viewpoint was black and white. We went back up the long flight of stairs. An everyday routine, and luckily for me I had no trouble with the climb. So like a true Canadian, I held the door open, letting others through and fist pumping whoever passed. I jumped into one of the four showers and washed off the sweat while hidden behind a curtain. Contrary to the movies, we had private places to shower, but only for 2 minutes. Then we had to suit up in our fatigues and head down for breakfast. Up and down the stairs we went. It could be a classroom, a workout, a training class, or whatever it was, and then it was stairs and more stairs. There was no doubt that I was going to lose a few pounds. Everyone was going to. Fortunately, our meals were a pleasing variety of professionally displayed options. The mess hall was an enormous room with high ceilings and dozens of long tables. Hundreds of chairs waited for us and voices buzzed with many recruits making private conversations. We had a high quality of cooked food, prepared by our own crew of military-trained chefs. First we grabbed a tray, then hit the buffet line, and there followed a category of options. Soup, appetizer, main course, and dessert. The food had to be nutritious and tasty enough to provide us with the fuel we needed to push through our highly physical calorie-burning days. The problem with my platoon in the mess hall was that it took a long time because we had to form lines and wait patiently until everyone was ready and seated. The problem with the mess hall was that it took a long time for everyone to grab a tray and get a seat to start eating. I only could look at my food until every single last person had sat down. No one eats alone, and a general rule to follow. Any task was going to take a long time to get done. When inspection started, I had to wait patiently at attention and report my serial number, rank, and occupation, while the sergeant checked if all my things were arranged in order. The first week finished up and we were supplied with our Green Army uniforms, and with it the responsibilities escalated. We had an additional element to our day, and although I dug the look, dressing to uniform standard took a meticulous amount of time. There was even an annoying procedure involved with rolling up our sleeves. 1 inch or 2 fingers from the middle of the arm, and evenly folded. It was so precise I often preferred to take in the heat instead. Next, I was given the best pair of boots I had ever experienced. Gore-Tex, all-weather, waterproof, and ankle-high. They were the pride of the military and anyone who served could recognize them. The first weekend did not present us with an opportunity to rest because we got decked out with sewing duties. We hauled up heavy bags of military clothes through 14 flights of stairs to our quarters. Then it was sewing and stitching for many long hours while the officers patrolled and watched over our shoulders, making sure we didn't doze off. After the first week, it was time for a proper physical test. The four sections were push-ups, sit-ups, grip test, and then running. For the first part, I needed an easy minimum of 19 to pass successfully. It was crazy because some people were unable to do even 10 and still joined knowing the prerequisites. This big guy from Nova Scotia was really struggling because he could do only 5. But he was not quitting. A good chunk of the boys were able to push out 40-50 and I was impressed. After the routine push-ups, I lay on my back. I whipped out as many ab crunches as I could for the next minute. Then I performed the grip test 2 times in each hand. And then it was time for the hardest one, the running beep test. I remember being nervous before the beep test started. The workout was difficult and I heard a lot of worried whispers about it. This is where people were going to get cut. We formed a line with 15 of us, and once the first beep clicked, our group had to cross to the other side before it beeped again. With more beeps, it grew more difficult, and soon my legs were on fire and people were being eliminated fast. I survived until round 10.5, and there was only 2 long-limbed young men still going at it when I was cut. Boot camp continued with slightly less people after the cuts. Some got lucky and got to stay because they showed hope to get stronger. Life continued with more training, classrooms, and more of the normal drill that I was slowly being accustomed to. The difficulty lay in the long duration of the days, and my eyes grew heavy and sleep deprivation became normal. I forgot the feeling of my own soft bed with privacy and an open breeze. By week 4, it was water training, an activity that allegedly burned more calories than other exercises. We did underwater aerobics and swam laps, and after warm-ups we were given a monumental task of surviving underwater with full fatigues. I was not the best swimmer by any means, and I jumped in with my clothing and immediately I got soaked through and felt the power of gravity taking me down. I had to tread water and fight my increasing weight for an entire minute. I lasted the countdown and pulled myself on dry ground, feeling pushed to my limit. The next day we were back poolside and we got introduced to a really high jump from a diving board and some people straight up refused to participate. I thought there was going to be a riot, but the leaders let it slide. The jump became optional by consensus, but still the majority of us went up to prove ourselves and conquer our fear. The others were written up with a note to file, but it was nothing serious. They were scared, and it was not possible to push them through. The military had normal people that wanted to support their families and have steady, reliable income. These were not heroes. We were not all Rambo. There was no war to fight. The world was changing. The military needed numbers to keep their organization from fading and losing its relevancy. When it was my turn to take the plunge, I stood up on the high board and flew through the air into the water with all the spectators down below. Days passed and base confinement was starting to become a difficult mental game, because it represented a different side of life that none of us were adjusted to. I contemplated quitting momentarily, and I cannot say who else did because I was not vocal about it. I pulled through inspections and grinding duties until week 7 rolled around. The great weight lifted and suddenly the whole process did not seem so difficult after all. That week a series of activities came into motion that resulted in me going away without leave. Basically, any outgoing activity or vacation required a written and signed consent. A ridiculous bureaucratic waste. The week of our impending freedom, the sergeant told us that 2 unlucky candidates were going to miss the temporary reprieve. No one looked forward to base confinement over the weekend. When I got selected, I was devastated. I did not reveal a single emotion or tell a soul, but inside I was fuming. I was determined to fight it because in my mind there was always a different way out. I was thinking creatively on how to escape, and that was not the time or place to do such a thing. I started plotting routes out of the base and how to access my vehicle without being spotted. Like my dad, determined anger was taking over my senses and judgment. All that mattered was the present moment and sending a message that I could not be contained or forced against my will. I had to think of what I saw during the morning jogs, and the only unguarded exit was a high barbed fence. I started to justify my reasons and reinforce my innocence by considering the assumed importance of my duty and the lack of difference if I vacated my position. I suddenly did not want to play the mind games anymore. They should not have picked me for base confinement. There was much weaker individuals that could have stayed behind. I was tired of them manipulating my ego. I had performed every task and my physical performance was exemplary. There was no turning back now. I wrote a note and I placed it upon my desk before I walked out. I scrawled quick words about freedom and the necessity to do what was right. Then I finished it with a flourish. I did not need that shit anymore. No more games, I was out. I put on my standard gray athletic clothes. My cover to escape security checkpoints. When I made it outside to the field, I beelined to my destination and the fence was as tall and imposing as I remembered during the morning jogs. I was kind of limited with my gray shorts, but I was determined not to back out. I gritted my teeth and prepared to jump over the fence. I thought I had the position and timing right, but when I pulled over, the sharp wire whipped back and sliced into my leg. I flew over and landed on my feet, but my right thigh was bleeding pretty badly. I had no doubt that I was going to have a scar. I hailed a very curious taxi driver and had him escort me to a bus terminal in Montreal. I knew I had to avoid being sighted by military personnel. Back in Toronto, I managed to pull myself together. I put a gauze bandage on my leg and stuck it tight with some tape and scissors. I put on a pair of dress pants and head out downtown to meet Chanel at a nightclub. We danced the night away and I almost forgot about my wound. That morning I woke up hungover. The vibrating sound of my cell phone pulled me from my fading dreams. It was one of my master seamen, LeBlanc. She informed me they had apparently found my very interesting note, and one of the sergeants read it out to the entire platoon. I was embarrassed. I had no intention of the note becoming public reading material. I only wanted to be polite and explain my disappearance. Even though she was sincere with her sympathy for me, I was unwilling to return or make a compromise. I had escaped under all their noses and security checkpoints and stupid sharp fences. Did I ever hate fences and speed bumps? Because they basically represent pointless obstacles. I renounced my military life. I didn't want to be affiliated anymore. I needed control of my own life, and I did not want their money anymore. I planned to make it on my own without sacrificing my beliefs and ideals. Because what could be more important than freedom? I stayed in Toronto and avoided the large collection of missed calls. I partied, went to restaurants and smoked lots of weed. I went to my parents' house to pick up Cliff because the golden furry demon was growing up without me. In less than a week, I was starting to feel guilty. I recognized the problem I had with the military and it was not going to go away. I had to face my deepest fears of confining commitment, and I knew it was not going to be easy. Training was going to present me with mundane challenges that were not courageous feats. Somehow I had imagined things differently, but that didn't mean I should throw in the towel, did it? I lay in bed considering my options. I began reconsidering based on the time investment and long process. What a well-thought-out scheme to protect their investments from leaving. I resigned to let them win and stop fighting. I took my motorcycle back to base near Montreal, and on the way it started to rain. I was about to get a speeding ticket, but when the cop saw my military ID, he handed it back, congratulated me, and turned and left. My crime was forgotten because suddenly I was above the law. I was military. An empowering feeling, but wrong in so many ways. I arrived back to Saint-Jean and reported myself to the front desk while expecting the worst. The civilian attendant instead looked bored and told me to wait. I paced around until my sergeant emerged and he looked at me with a gaze that spoke a thousand words. I expected a verbal reprimand or disapproval, but got nothing. No formality, no handshake, no approval, no apologies. He beckoned me to follow him and we walked back to our section of the base. I was glad to avoid the awkward conversation that would have been empty of sincerity. He briefed me quickly on the new situation and professionally I accepted the consequences of my actions. Alas, it was a tough pill to swallow because since I missed a supposedly essential component of my training, I now had to restart the entire indoctrination process on a whole new platoon. It was nonsense, but there was nothing I could do. I considered trying to convince him to alter the decision because starting over 8 weeks was pointless and a waste of their own resources. I wanted to go on a tirade about missing a few easy days of work meaning absolutely nothing, but what would it accomplish? I said nothing instead. I was going to prove to myself that I could keep my mouth shut and do it all again. A new challenge, and a new chance to excel. Until then, I was a warrior. Literally. I entered a training and rehabilitation platoon for people that failed the physical conditioning aspects but still had hope to continue. This platoon was called Warrior, and I had to slap a big W on my chest. In my case, the situation was a little unique since I excelled at the physical aspects. I was there instead for disciplinary action. There, in my new platoon, fresh weaklings struggled and gasped for air with bony arms flailing. Contrary for me, the training was excellent. I committed all day and every day to it with glee. No longer did I drill basic movements or worried about classroom lectures. After one tough workout, I saw someone that did not physically belong. She looked out of place, beautiful, fit, and with strong legs and a confident expression. It was in the evening during our late power snack that I sat next to her and we made conversation. She had pale skin, short dark hair and dark eyes, and she came from Quebec. Her French seemed only slightly better than my own, so it made for interesting conversation. Amber told me she was on Warrior because of her kids. Still, as we talked, she did not mention the father once. Was it flirting? Problems on the domestic front? I did not dare ask. We connected pretty fast regardless, and I found we could rely on each other for emotional support because the distance from our homes and the new foreign environment was an obstacle in itself. The next day we stood outside the base basking in the hot sun in full uniform while practicing drill movements. We matched synchronized steps and marching turns when my old platoon emerged in the distance. I saw the questions forming in their eyes and mouths as they marched right past. Did they know why I mysteriously disappeared from the platoon? How did they react to my note? What was I doing there on Warrior? I wanted to answer the silent but implied questions, but they had to maintain stride and there was no time for a conversation. Then it was over. My old platoon was gone, and I should have been there too. Back on base, I was hanging out lots with Amber. After a workout, I sat in her cubicle while she studied and we made jokes and talked about everything except her husband. I was starting to find a vibe between us. I had a perfect opportunity to kiss her after one workout when she stared at me and smiled silently. But I thought of my girlfriend in Toronto. Something was not right, and I was unable to live in the moment. Still, she was getting hard to resist.